Welcome to Torti Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Dalet, Chapter 4. We're in the middle of a unit of Prakim that relate to Yirmiyahu's Nevuot in the time of King Yoshio. The themes that Yirmiyahu has been building on continue here, the potential for reunification of the 12 tribes, and the awesome moment in history that they are standing in that can bring either fantastic redemption, as Yirmiyahu described in Perek Gimel, or another step down the road to despair. Yirmiyahu speaks here to the people of Judea who cannot seem to let go of the comfort provided for them by their system of idolatry. One problem that Yirmiyahu deals with over and over is the problem of superficiality. He calls to the people of Yehuda in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Niru lechem nir, va'al tizru'u el kotzim. Break up the unplowed, fallow ground, and don't plant among the thorns. Yirmiyahu imagines the people of Yehuda as unplowed ground, ripe for change, ripe for a new beginning. But starting a new field is so hard. There's so much work to do. He beseeches them, don't be satisfied with just dropping a seed into a ground that's covered in thorns. If you really want to grow something beautiful, you need to do the deep work of first getting the thorns out of your land, and then the farmer can plant in a ground that has been turned over, that's ready to accept a seed. As the Radak says, the people hear Yirmiyahu's message and they repeat it back on their lips, but the message hasn't entered their hearts. It hasn't slipped into their consciousness. It doesn't influence the way that they act. Yirmiyahu sees a people that are chameleons. They can slip into any role that is demanded of them. When Yosho or his officers are around, they play the part of serving Hashem. But in their deepest selves, they slip back into their old patterns. Niru lechem nir, he begs of them. Do the hard stuff. Deep dig. Dig deep into yourselves. Don't content yourself to live a double life with superficial change. As Yirmiyahu is saying this, as he is describing the glorious future that awaits the people, he also hears the faint beatings of the war drums in the not-too-distant future. In Perek Gimel, Yirmiyahu described what could happen if the people do a real tshuva. If they give up their idolatry, they can return to Hashem. We can reunite the 12 tribes in Eretz Yisrael. But here, we talk about the alternative, the fulfillment of the first perek where Yirmiyahu saw the boiling pot that's bubbling and rumbling and may soon spill over. He sees a war happening. He sees the people running into their fortified cities. He sees banners flying, not banners of the glorious return of the 10 tribes, but signposts that point the way of the people to retreat and run away from the enemy. Yirmiyahu knows that if the work of tshuva is not done, then this is the picture that's just beyond the horizon, that only he can see, while the people sit in oblivious stupor, thinking that nothing bad will ever happen to them. Using sad and beautiful imagery, he tells the people what will unfold when Hashem sends the enemy from the north towards them. Then they will scream out in verse 13, Hinei ka'ananim ya'aleh v'kisufa markvotav, kalu minisharim susav oilanu, kishudadnu, behold, he, the enemy, ascends like clouds. He's surrounding us. He's everywhere. His chariots are like a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe to us, they cry out in despair. We are ruined. As Yirmiyahu sees the picture of bitter desolation at the end of the road, he also proclaims that it will be the people's own fault for not changing their ways, for giving up on what they could have had, for ignoring their prophets and their righteous king. He says to them in verse 18, Darkech u'ma'alelech asu ele, lachzot ra'atech, kimar, kinaga ad libech. It's your conducts and your deeds that have brought this upon you. I told you what you were doing wrong. This is your bitter punishment, and it's going to pierce your very heart. One thing that makes Sefer Yirmiyahu so unique and special is the intimacy that Yirmiyahu has with his reader. How he lets the reader, he lets us, the reader of his book, hear not only what he's saying to the people, but how he feels about what he's saying. As these horrible words are dripping from his mouth, as he's painting a picture of the destruction that's coming, Yirmiyahu himself is convulsing in pain, that this is the terrible fate that awaits the Jewish people, and that he's the one that has to tell it to them. May I, my insides, my heart, He calls out in verse 19, Ochila, I'm writhing in pain. Kirot libi homeli libi, the walls of my heart moans within me. As Yirmiyahu is saying the words to the people, he tells us how it hurts him to say it. He wishes he could just be a Navi that says good things, wishes he didn't have to be God's microphone to announce the coming destruction, wishes in a way that he could not stand up to the nation, let them continue on their own path. But he has too much information. Not giving them his nevuah would be giving up on them. Instead, he proclaims at the end of the pasuk, Lo acharish, I cannot be silent. Ki kol shofar shamat nafshi, truat milchama. I hear the sound of the horns of war. The alarms of war are coming. If Yirmiyahu would keep the news to himself, if he would try to soften the blow, if he would become oblivious himself and be convinced with the half-hearted tshuva, the superficial pious acts that the people portray, then he would be leaving them to their terrible fate. Instead, he says, I cannot be silent. He feels compelled to scream out, to give over his prophecy of doom, because the drums of war are beating in the distance. It's like the rumbling of a train, but only Yirmiyahu has his hand on the metal rail and can feel the vibrations. Only Yirmiyahu knows what's yet to come, so he yells to the people, get off the track, the train is coming. And they laugh at him because they don't believe him. In Pasuk 22, Yirmiyahu laments the type of people who would plod forward, not recognizing the path that they are moving down. Ki avila mi, oti lo yadu, banim sachlim hema, lo nivonim hema, chachamim hema lahara, ulahativ lo yada'u. My people are stupid. They give me no heed. They don't pay any attention to me. They're foolish children. They're not intelligent. They're very clever at doing wrong, but unable to do right. The people of Yirmiyahu's time have convinced themselves that what they've done is enough. They look around at their society and they see everyone acting the same way, and they convince themselves that, okay, I'm okay and you're okay. They're wise, said Yirmiyahu, but they're not intelligent. Wise because they're able to hide behind their strategies. Wise because they can create an external life for themselves, but they're not intelligent. True intelligence, says the Radak, is knowledge of God. Knowledge of right and wrong, what we call moral clarity. This type of knowledge, they are lacking. And when Yirmiyahu talks to them about it, they reject him, look down their noses at him. He's just an unsophisticated kid from Anatot. What does he know? In his attempt to convince the people that what he's saying is real, Yirmiyahu uses stark imagery of the desolation that's coming. Psukim 23-26 all start with the word Ra'iti, I see. In each pasuk, Yirmiyahu explains in vivid detail the visions that are assailing his consciousness, the visions of destruction. The Rambam explains that there are two main roles of a Navi. The primary one is to speak to the nation and rebuke them, push them to change their ways and fix their sins. The secondary one is to be a seer, to enter God's world and see the future. We already know from Parak Aleph from chapter 1 that Yirmiyahu does not trust his power of speech, but Hashem tells him that his vision is perfect. Hey, tavta lirot, says God when he shows Yirmiyahu the almond branch. You have seen well. Here, Yirmiyahu uses his strength, his quality of seeing, to describe a picture that may motivate the people to throw off their superficiality and start the real work of serving God with their whole hearts. I see the land, says Yirmiyahu, and is filled with destruction. I see the sky. It has lost its light. I see the mountains, the hills, the people, the animals, the farmland, the towns. They're all in ruins. The visions that Yirmiyahu sees fill his head, and it is because of them that he must keep pushing. He does not trust the power of speech, but he cannot be silent either. He loves the people who reject him. He cares about the fate of the nation that does not seem to care about itself. May I, he calls out. My insides are all in knots. My heart is hurting. Yirmiyahu lets us into his inner world as he wrestles with the moment in history that he is in. The people are complacent, and Yirmiyahu knows it will be their downfall. They are planting their seeds among the thorns instead of working to first clear the land. The redemption is right around the corner, but so is the destruction. The future will depend on the people's actions. Do they want the glorious homecoming described in Parak Gimel chapter 3? Or do they want to place one foot in front of the other, shuffling slowly towards their own demise? The choice belongs to them. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishma, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.